Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.ByteRadio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Hello, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Norman Allagym, and we will be talking about his new book, From Me to You, Stories About Life, Love, Family, Faith, and How to Negotiate a Bigger Allowance. A father creates a remarkable coming-of-age gift for his daughter, stories of love, wisdom, and family that have guided his path throughout life, as she prepares to embark on her own. How does a father tell his child how to live a meaningful life? How does a father tell his child how to avoid the mistakes he made? And how does a father tell his child how much he loves her? The answers are here in From Me to You for the author's daughter, Mackenzie, to discover when she turns 18. From generation to generation and full of humor and heart, Norm Allagym's gift to Mackenzie is the wisdom of his years. Norm is a successful Hollywood talent manager and producer, and as an immigrant child from Uruguay, he started with nothing but the support of principled and hardworking family and a strong desire to make something of himself. Norm's book is available from Amazon.com, and I do have a direct link in the show page description to his book there. So with that, I'd like to welcome Norm to the show. Good day, Norm.
Hello, Robert. How are you?
I'm doing very well. Fine. Thank you, sir. And I enjoyed reading your letters to Mackenzie. There's a wide range of them, and they are truly, as the introduction said, filled with heart and humor.
Well, thank you. I'm glad you enjoyed the book.
I did. So we have to start with what inspired you to write these weekly letters to Mackenzie?
Well, it's interesting. I was a little bit, by the time Mackenzie was born, I was already a bit of an older dad. And so there's all this stuff that I wanted to tell her about, as I say in the title, about life and love and faith and family. But when you're 10 or 11 years old, you don't have the capacity to hear it. You don't have the interest to hear it. Your dad is annoying for the most part. And so I didn't take for granted that I would always be around. And I decided I was going to write her a letter a week for a year. And so what happened was I wrote her the first letter. And then I decided, okay, now I'm going to write the second letter next week, and I had no idea what to write, and I was facing a blank page. I had never written a book or anything like that. And so really just to hold myself accountable, I decided to post the first letter on Facebook, and I said in my Facebook post, I'm going to be writing one of these every week for a year. Look for it here. Would make me make sure that I wrote them. And then I did. I literally wrote her one letter every week for a year.
Wow, yeah, that's great. Set up an accountability aspect so that you can't let it slide. You kind of have to follow through, especially on Facebook. All
Correct.
Of those people can be waiting and looking.
Correct. And, of course, The more I wrote, I found that I was being incredibly fulfilled. I found that I enjoyed the process and the things that I was talking to Mackenzie about. And, the blog ended up being pretty widely read. People would write me on my Facebook or Twitter page saying, oh, my God, these are such wonderful universal themes, and it reminded me of something my dad said to me or I wanted to say to my kid or whatever. And it just, it just pushed me forward to keep going.
Yeah. Well, when you talked about, being an older dad, you know, and in the book you talk about thinking of things in Mackenzie years, you know,
yeah.
You're going to be 80 and she's going to be such and such. You know, that's, you know, in today's society, people are becoming parents at a much later age, and that's a major concern. And I think, you know, what you did is a way to, you know, pass on to your daughter and for others to pass on to their children, just their values and things that would normally, you know, be taught throughout life, with the idea that, you know, you just may not be around for that.
Well, one of the things that has been very fulfilling about this book and writing it is that younger people who don't necessarily yet have children have said to me, oh my gosh, I love your letters. I wish my dad or my mom had written letters to me. And then people who have children are saying to me, oh my gosh, it's not too late. I should start writing to my son or my daughter. And that's been really very fulfilling. You know, and at some point you want to share whatever wisdom you have with the world. And the other thing that's been interesting is because I did not, and you know because you read the book, these are not general stories of, oh, young men or young women should do this, that, or the other. These are very specific mm-hmm. stories related to Mackenzie and my other two daughters and me. But I will say that so many people who have read this, even when parts of it were in blog form, who have said you really tap on universal themes. And even though you're talking to or about your specific experiences or your daughter, it really reminded me of something in my own life or with my own kid or my own parent or something like that. I will tell you one amazing little story, because, again, I really never set out to be an author. I just set out to write letters to my daughter. And one day, I had been doing it for about 6 months, and one day I got a call from an acquaintance of mine, not really a friend in the world, but a Facebook friend who I mm-hmm. knew in the passing. And he called me up one day, and he said, look, I just want to tell you your stories have saved my life. And I said, oh, that's nice. Thank you. And he said, no, I don't think you understand what I'm saying. Your letters have literally saved my life. I said, what in the world are you talking about? They're just letters to my daughter. And he said, I know. He said, but because you and I aren't, you know, great friends in the world, you don't know this. But over the last 6 or 12 months, I've had a lot of issues in my life. I had the death of a loved one. I've had some business reversals. I've had some issues with my, you know, people I love in my life. So much so that I've just started thinking, oh, my God, I should just end it all and be done with all this pain. And it's because I was posting online every week. And he said, and almost every time that I would come to that place, you would post another one of your stories, and it would just uplift me and remind me how mm-hmm. wonderful life is and people who love me. And I decided, no, I should hang around. So, I mean, imagine, you know, I was inspiring him, I guess, but that story just was beyond inspiring to me.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the one thing that, you know, if you write an authentic book about real life experiences and real people, you know, that's, I mean, it does inspire and touches a chord with, you know, with people who read it, and I'm truly amazed, you know, at the ripple effect that, you know, just writing, here am I saying just writing, but writing, you know, letters, you know, can have beyond, you know, just simply you know, giving your opinions and on that, you know, family values, love, faith, and all that to your daughter, and, you know, and the one that I really, one of them that I really liked was the one where Mackenzie's horse died, and the the theme of that was the focus that, you know, sure, it'd be sad when someone dies, but she was also happy that there was another horse that was alive and, you know, and still had some time ahead of them. So, you know, in the idea of, you know, kind of kicking into that idea of someone wanting to end their life, you know, here is a child recognizing that, you know, it's sad when someone leaves, but, you know, life goes on for the other people, you know, and, you know, and it can, for someone who's, you know, contemplating taking their own life, it, you know, would give them second pause, you know, to be able to,
well, look,
to recognize their impact.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's interesting that one spoke to you because, you know, all of us, to your point, all of us grieve differently. All of us deal with death differently. And that particular story, it's funny because I had been grappling in my own life as I was writing that story or gearing up to write that story with what is life all about and what are we doing here and all those things. And, you know, as an adult, sometimes you tend to overthink everything. And you know, my daughter, one of the things I love about this book is I feel like I learned as much from my daughter as I hope she is or will learn from me. But that was such a pure thing because, you know, her grandfather had two horses and she heard that one of them had died and she was very sad and she was crying. And then she said, well, is the other one still around? And can I feed it carrots? Mm-hmm. And then she was, you know, okay, well, let's move on with the world.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and again, you know, that particular for someone who reads that, who is thinking about ending theirs, or for someone who is, you know, just in the midst of sadness, having lost someone.
Yes.
It's a really important message, you know, to grieve but to live.
To grieve but to live. Yeah. And what does it mean? One of the stories, you know, I wrote as really as my sister lay dying, and it made me think about how to honor her life, understand her death, and then share all that with my family and my young daughter. And, you know, look, that's life, right? That's life, and we try to be happy. We try to acknowledge the difficult parts of our life and then try to laugh through it and eat a little bit of chocolate.
Exactly. Or lots of chocolate.
Or lots of chocolate, yes.
So now, how old was Mackenzie when you gave her the letters? And was she aware of them as you were posting on Facebook?
Mackenzie was about 10 or 11 when I wrote the letters.
Okay.
My goal when I started writing them, I mean, she wasn't, you know, as a 10 or 11-year-old, I don't think these letters are, you know, I don't think she was ready to read the letters at the time. But she was aware that I was writing her letters and that I was posting letters online. And I think she kind of liked that and it excited her. But she had not read those letters. My goal when I wrote the letters was that for her 18th birthday, I would have the letters bound into some kind of book and give them to her as her 18th birthday present, or at least as one of them. She probably would have wanted more than just that, but to give her a bound book of these letters on her 18th birthday. And then of course the book was, you know, the letters were published as a book and it's coming out now. She's going to be 17 in a couple of months. So she's smack in the teen years right now.
Okay. Okay, so now, what was her reaction? You know, when now I'm assuming now that she's read the book, you know, and so what's been her reaction to the letters? I mean, you know, to the information that you wrote.
I'm honestly not sure she has read all of the letters. When I was first writing the letters, when she was 10 or 11. She said, should I read the letters? And I said, well, you can, of course. There's nothing bad in the letters, but you probably shouldn't read the letters till you're at least 18 years old. So I'm not sure. She follows instruction pretty well. I'm actually not. I've showed her a couple of individual letters. I'm not sure she has read the entire book, although now she has an understanding that the letter, you know, she's seen the title of the book. She understands what what it's about, and that it's, you know, really a manifestation of my love for her and her sisters, and you know, the keepsake that hopefully that will be one day for her and her own children. And you know, I've said to some people about 2 or 3 weeks ago, I read the audiobook for Audible, which, shameless plug, comes out August 7th. But I will tell you that that was one of the most fulfilling things I've ever done in my life, because what I realized that in 50 years, 60 years, when, you know, probably I'm either long gone or, you know, a blithering idiot, she'll be able to hear my voice when I was still reasonably vibrant, and, you know, my love for her and what I thought of her and her sisters. And it was quite something, because when I got in the booth, I had never done anything like that. But when I got in the booth, I said to the, you know, producer, sound engineer, whatever he was, I said, look, I know you haven't read this. You'll hear it along with me. But you know, probably 7 or 8 times over the course of things, I'm going to break down and start crying. So I don't want you to be alarmed.
So, right on the front.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, and which in fact did happen, So
yeah.
What I hope is that this will be something that she can look back on. That's where I was going with the Audible thing, that she can look back on and know how much I love her.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, the spoken word carries so much more than reading the word. And, you know, when by going through and reading those letters, you really convey the emotion and the heartfelt joy and sorrow, you know, and laughter. You can pick it up, you know, lightly in the book, but when you hear it in the voice, I think that's where it really comes through. And just by the fact of crying, just indicates just how soul felt, you know, the words were.
Yeah, no doubt. And one of the most interesting letters for me to read was the chapter that I wrote on the birds and the bees and the conversations that fathers have with their children, and specifically fathers have with their daughters, and the awkwardness and embarrassment that goes along with, you know, having that conversation with your daughter. And I think a little bit of that actually came across in the reading of the letter. So I'm curious to hear that one myself.
I'm sure. So, I mean, that one obviously probably was a little awkward or difficult. What would you feel was the hardest one letter that you wrote?
The hardest letter that I wrote. Well, I think the hardest letter that I wrote was probably the one about Mackenzie's Aunt Viv, because she was literally dying as I wrote it. Mm-hmm. And so it really made me come to terms with my own sister dying. Again, you know, it's funny, when I was a kid, my father always used to say, whatever you do for yourself. You may think you're doing it for other people, but you're good or bad, you're doing it for yourself, which this book really did for me. I mean, it was beyond fulfilling and fun to write for me. Hopefully it will be fun for Mackenzie and the rest of my family as well. But in writing the story of my sister who was dying, it made me come to grips with what that relationship had meant to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm sure. And you know, writing about death is a hard one. You know, and now there were a couple letters that you wrote. One I think was called Evil, that had to deal with the Columbine,
yes.
And then there was another one later, the Newtown, Connecticut. To me, you know, as I was reading that had to, for a father to be writing to his daughter about kids killing kids, had to have been a challenge. And how was that for you? I mean, you know, writing on that particular topic, or those topics, both of them.
Well, I think that, to your point, I think those were very difficult. And it's interesting, because the chapter called Evil, my my approach and my tone to it was that there really is evil in the world, and things happen without explanation, without rationale, and you know, we hope that we and the people we love will stay out of those crosshairs. And then the letter that I wrote, you know, a few months later about Newtown, Connecticut, which was probably the second or third at that time, by the way, and there's been, as you know, dozens and dozens since then, that just made me think, why aren't we as a society, why aren't we as a culture taking responsibility for stopping that, and how is it that we can allow that? And, you know, so the, as you know, the tone of those two letters are very different from each other, but they're both very real emotions that I had. And as a father myself, to just think that one day your kid goes to school and doesn't come back, and that that could have been caused by a schoolmate is just almost beyond comprehension, really, in a civilized society.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And in the second one, the one on Newtown, to me, it really had an air of like a call to action, you know, for people to wake up and, you know, change the path, you know, that we seem to be on.
Yes. No, it 100% a call to action. And you know, I think I say at some point that if we don't do something, then we can mourn or recite scripture all we want, and it doesn't amount to a hill of beans, you know?
Yeah, I agree.
So, yeah, now, those were difficult ones to write.
Yeah, yeah, it was, you know, and I think one of the benefits, or I guess one of the things that kept popping into my mind as I was reading that is that, you know, this is a parent talking to their child. I mean, it's one of those things where, you know, it's, you know, I'm passing on to you, you know, what I've learned so that you can in turn, you know, not make the same mistake, but also do better, you know. And, you know, and in your book, you reference, you know, grandpa a few times. So, I mean, it really had this generational kind of passing the torch sense to me.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know that I was doing that purposely, but I will say that I wanted to give her a little bit of family lore, and I wanted to give her a sense of family and what that means and what it has meant to me and what I hope it will mean to her. You know, I think that's important in life. I think family, faith, I think those are important things. However you come down on them, you know, every family is different. Everyone's approach to things like religion, it's all that is different. But acknowledging its place and importance in our lives and in our families, that's what I wanted to impart.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. Now, you have a red carpet show business professional life.
Yes,
and
I do.
One of your letters to Mackenzie dealt with her red carpet life ahead. So can you share with us how you balance that part of your life with, you know, keeping things grounded, you know, and down to earth?
Yes, of course. My daughter, interestingly enough, has been a very successful actress as a child. She started acting at the age of 7. She was in the Broadway National Tour of Annie. She was a series regular on All My Children for a couple of years, and then she became a series regular on a Showtime series called Nurse Jackie, where she played Edie Falco's youngest daughter. She's done a number of movies. So she's had quite a bit of success in life, professional success in life. And as you say, that's what I sort of do for a living, in representing clients and producing movies and television shows. And it can be a heady life. But to your point, I also wanted her to understand that you still have to work hard. You still have to be respectful to people. You still have to do all of those things. One of the funniest stories, it's not actually in the book, but one of the funniest stories, Mackenzie was nominated for a SAG Award for Best Ensemble Cast. I mean, it wasn't just her; it was everybody on the cast of Nurse Jackie. And I actually do talk about that particular thing and what my experience was like as a guy who goes to award shows as just another stressful day at the office, and then as a guy who went to an award show as a proud dad. But one of the funniest things was, you know, when she was nominated for the SAG Award, you know, the some very famous kids dress designer, I wish I remembered her name because it was a beautiful dress, you know, loaned her a $6,000 or $7,000 dress, and the network sent a hair and makeup person to do her hair and makeup, mm-hmm. and we had the limousine to the event, and then she went to all the parties. I mean, it was really the Cinderella story in real life as much as anybody could possibly have. We were probably, and my wife Laura and I went with her, and we got back home about 1 a.m, and she had just had the night of her life. And then the next morning, my wife Laura went into her bedroom and said, "So, did you have a good time last night?" And Mackenzie said, "Oh my God, it was amazing, it was great. It was so much fun, and I met this person, that person." And Laura said, "Well, that's great. Now, clean your room, and then I have some other chores for you to do." Right? So that's really, we have tried hard to balance those two things, to let her enjoy what she does, to let her compete for roles if that's something that she wants to do, but to not lose sight of her humanity and her childhood and all the things that go along with it.
Yeah, and it sounds like your wife is an exceptional woman. You know, listening, reading the
she
stories
is.
and how she supports the family is really, you know, really heart lifting. So, well, we're about halfway through the show, Norm, already. So I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you would like to call in and ask Norm any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those of you listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions, feel free to type them in there, and we'll get to them. And so, Norm, when we come back, as we mentioned, Mackenzie, you know, she's the youngest of the three daughters, and came to you not only late in life, but I'm curious as far as parenting, how, you know, if what you've done, what you did differently with her from others, the stepdaughters, or just anything about parenting, you know, for someone who has a child later in life. So when we come back, we'll talk about that, okay?
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, great. Everyone stay tuned. We'll be back in about 90 seconds.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show.
Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Norman Allegem. We're talking about his newly released book, From Me to You, Stories About Life, Love, Family, Faith, and How to Negotiate a Bigger Allowance. Norm's book is available from Amazon.com. And again, I do have a direct link to his book there in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Norm.
Hello.
Hello. Now, before we talk about parenting, I do have a caller who doesn't really have a question, but he wants to kind of make a comment about that tough letter that he wrote. So I kind of want to just get his yeah. Okay. Now, and his name is Bob, and he's calling from the Whitsunday Islands off of the coast of Australia. So, hello, Bob.
Good day, Robert. Good day, Norman.
Oh, hi, Bob. How are you? Thank you for calling
I'm
in.
I'm awesome, my friend. There is a time delay, and what's been triggered for me is I'd like to share with you quickly the hardest letter I ever wrote. So if you just hang with me, I'll pick up a talking stick, and away I go. So here goes. It was in the early 90s, and I was doing the work on the healing the wounds of my childhood. And I was born in 52, so you can do the numbers. And I got to the stage where I hated my mum. I hated my mum. She always beat me. And I had a very violent and abusive childhood. But you got to love your mum. You've only got one mum. You've got to love your mum. So, you know, I hated my mum, but you got to love your mum. And that dichotomy was tearing my soul apart. And so I sat down and I wrote the letter to mum. Dear mum, I'm just writing to tell you my story of how it felt for me growing up as a child in our family. And, I thought it would be over in a couple of pages, but it ended up as thick as War and Peace. You know, I hated it when you beat me with the wooden stirrer for the washing boiler. I hated it when you picked me up by the wrist and beat me with a frying pan. You know, and I just got it all out. I just got it all out, you know. And I finished it off. Your loving son, Bob, please tell me your story. So I'm in Australia, mum's back in England, and I posted that letter. And that was one of the hardest things I ever did. And I'm still shaking now. I can feel back to that time when I posted it. And so I eventually got a letter back from mum saying, oh, I'm sorry, Bobby. You must think I'm the worst mother in the whole world. She was a German immigrant to the UK. She had trouble. And I wrote back, so no, mum, it's not about blame. There's no blame here at all. It's just I'm telling you my story. Tell me your story. So eventually she wrote back, and she was born in Germany in 1924, between the wars. Her dad was an alcoholic, and mum was a control freak. Her cousins were in the SS, or they were shot. She had a really abusive childhood too, you know. And so hearing her story allowed me to understand that what was happening here was she was just dumping on me what got dumped on her, but she was unaware of it. And the phrase that springs to mind is like, if you don't hand it back, you pass it on. So, you know, reading her letter, I'm just full of tears. And I phoned her in England, and she had gone down with a second fresh bout of bowel cancer, and I managed to get hold of her in St. John's Hospital in Newbury. And that was the first time we spoke as mother and son, two adults. And so with tears over both sides of the pond, you know, we shared that connection. And then the following day she died. And so what a beautiful closure. And then I'm walking around as if somebody's taken an elephant off my shoulders. But there's still a niggle there. There's still a niggle. What's this niggle? You know? And I thought, right, Dad, you bastard. So I wrote a letter back. But Dad had already died, so I just put the letter in an envelope to Dad in heaven and burnt it. Now, the final thing about this is last year I connected with a spiritual medium on internet radio, by the way, on Blog Talk Radio, and asked if I could contact my mum. And she said, yeah, my mum is stood there with tears streaming down her face just saying thank you for writing that letter, because it allowed her to go through the same process, even though she's moved beyond. She realised that, you know, she was behaving with the crap that was dumped on her. So that's the hardest. That's the hard. But it was so liberating. It was so liberating.
Yes.
And, I could move from that place of hate through understanding back to love. And for me, that was just, it was worth... It's the scariest thing I've ever done, apart from fires, I think. So thank you for allowing me to share my story. Thank you for allowing
thank
me
you
to
for
share
sharing
my story.
It. Thank you for sharing it.
Good.
Thank you. So, that the idea of writing letters, yours, Norm, were coming from love. Didn't have that, heaviness, that Bob's had. But, I think recognizing what you wrote and you're passing it on and what he wrote and clarifying, the relationship, there's a lot of power in writing letters.
Well, there is, and I think even if you think about Bob's letter, I'm sure when he says that he didn't have the elephant on his shoulder anymore, I know exactly what he means, because as people, we often, in my experience, people don't even necessarily want you to agree with them on anything. They just want you to hear them, and they just want to be able to tell you what's in their head and in their heart. And so when you think about Bob's letter, even though it was addressing difficult times in his life, I'm sure it was an incredibly cathartic experience for him. And as Bob himself said, for his mom, even though he was addressing things that were tough, and it allowed her to communicate, which really goes back a little bit to what I wanted, almost your first question to me, what did I want to achieve when I was writing these letters? I just wanted my daughter and my wife and my two stepdaughters to know how much I love them and what was in my heart. And if there were difficult things, I wanted to talk about them too.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, is there maybe an excerpt from the book, from one of the letters that you might want to share with listeners so they can get a good idea firsthand of, what's contained in the book?
Well, I can do an excerpt. Do you want a funnier one or what?
Yeah,
would,
let's do funny. Yeah, let's do funny. Uplifting funny.
I will tell you one of the letters that I really enjoyed writing, and it's actually one of the letters that Mackenzie read, is called Daddy Sitting. And I don't know if I should read the whole thing. I leave that to you. But what I realized when I started having children is how hard parenting is. And this letter talked about my first experience alone with Mackenzie when my wife Laura was out of town. And it's called Daddy Sitting. Dear Mackenzie, parenting is hard. In 2012 in Houston, Texas, a mother of 10 children threw a birthday party at the local Chuck E. Cheese for her 5-year-old daughter and then left her at the restaurant. The good news is that she didn't do it on purpose. The bad news is she didn't realize her mistake until 8 a.m. the following day when she was getting her other 9 kids ready for school. Fortunately, the child was fine, and the police said they planned to analyze the surveillance video to decide whether or not criminal charges were warranted. No doubt the event was traumatic for the little girl, though hopefully she won't remember much of it as time goes by. And certainly the police should take these matters seriously. Yet I have little doubt that if I had 10 children to look after, I would periodically forget one or another of them all over the city, at the very least. Once when you were 6, your mom went to Cleveland to visit her best friend, Susie. It was the first time I had been called upon to take care of you alone for any length of time. I was excited to have a whole weekend of bonding time with you, but I was a little anxious, too. What if something came up that I couldn't handle? Your mom assured me that she was just a phone call away. She also reminded me that I could always call Jamie, who was living nearby on the USC campus. I chided your mom for implying that our college-aged daughter might have been better equipped to handle a child care issue than I was. But secretly, I took comfort that Jamie was indeed there if I got in over my head. In those days, you took a dance class every Friday night at a dance studio in North Hollywood called Millennium. That Friday, I took great care to dress you in the outfit Mom had set out for you before she left. I made sure you had your water, your dance bag, dance shoes, just as your mom had instructed. I triple-checked the time of the class so you wouldn't be late, and I made us leave for class way too early in case we hit traffic. When we got there, the parking guard smiled upon us, and we got a spot right inside the Millennium lot. So far, so good. After class, we decided to make a night of it, and I suggested we walk to the pizza place down the street. I was delighted at how smoothly things were going, and I was quite proud of myself. What I didn't realize was that the parking lot was locked at night, so when we returned from dinner, we couldn't get out of the car. We couldn't get to our car. You got scared and started to cry, which is when my respect for your mother's parenting skills increased exponentially. Suddenly, I was scared too, but for a different reason. I knew we could simply take a taxi home and get the car in the morning. That wasn't the problem. The problem was that I had no idea how to comfort you. I put on my happiest face and told you this would be a fun adventure for the two of us to share. I said that Mom would be very jealous when she heard we got to take a taxi ride together. That seemed to pacify you a little, so I decided not to mention that I had left the house keys inside the car, and thus had no clue how we'd get in the house once we got there. Jamie had a key, and I called her on the cab ride home. You were being quite brave, but you were still sniffling when I got Jamie's voicemail. So I made a point of being very jovial as I left her a message. Unfortunately, when you heard the part about my not having the house keys, you started bawling again. Like most people of her generation, Jamie rarely listened to her voicemails, so I covered my bases and sent her a text as well. Yet by the time the taxi arrived at home, Jamie had not returned either my phone call or my text. Plan B was for me to jump over the gate, but you were now crying for a third time and begged me not to leave you alone outside the gate. I didn't know what to do. I told you that nothing bad could ever happen to you as long as we were together, and that I'd have the gate open and be back in no time. When that didn't calm you, I told you to count while I went over the gate. I promised that I would give you a dollar for every number you got to before I was back. Yes, that's pathetic. I admit it. But $12 and a bruised knee later, we were at least inside the property, and we caught a break when a glass door to the family room had been left unlocked. We were home at last. Anyway, it goes on a little further, but that's the idea.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
That's great. Yeah, that's great. You know, and whether or not, you know, she remembered, I mean, obviously she will now. I mean, it's written down for the world to see. But, I mean, you know, it's one of those kinds of interactions, you know, that I think really form the memories, you know, between parent and child that
yes.
really, you know, kind of guide them, you know, into the future. And you know, so it's real important, you know, you handled it very well, you know. I handled it as well as I could,
let's say that.
Yeah. I probably owed her a couple hundred bucks.
Yes, exactly. It does give you a sense, and I know you wanted to talk about parenting and the difference between mm-hmm. Mackie and raising our stepdaughters, but it does really make you realize how difficult parenting can be and how unprepared all of us really are to chase those challenges, to face those challenges. And really all we can do is the best we can, and I continue to say, as long as we show our kids our love and as long as we let them express themselves and be who they were destined to be, then I think we're going to be fine and they'll be fine.
Yeah, absolutely. So now is there, you know, you've kind of gone through this set of letters for Mackenzie. Is there a set two? You know, is there a follow-up going to be happening? Are you continuing to write her letters?
Well, I don't know the answer to that question. A lot of people have asked me that and have said, you know, they love the letters and they want to see more. And what I say, not really tongue-in-cheek, is I'm not sure I have one thing left to say in parenting. So if I come up with more ideas, you know, if for teen years strike other things to discuss, then I'll do it. But I'm not currently planning to now.
Okay. Well, you know, and you know, she's getting to the age where she may be starting to write her own letters, you know, and maybe there will be letters to Papa.
That would be great. The other thing I learned, by the way, writing this book is that being a parent and being a caretaker is not really a biological exercise. I will tell you that I am as close with Heather and Jamie, our two older ones, as I am with Mackie. And I feel just as strongly about them and would throw myself in front of a train for either of them, even though they're not my blood, but they are my family. And that mm-hmm. was an interesting lesson to learn as well.
Yeah, very much. I actually have a book coming out next week, The Heart and Soul of Caring, all about caregiving and some of the joys and challenges. Yeah, they're involved in that.
I can't wait to pre-order it and read it.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, but you know, that caregiving, caretaking part of life, to me, it's a chance to really demonstrate unconditional love. You know, and you know, I think that's to me that's what I think part of the meaning of life is to learn and master that unconditional love aspect.
I agree. And it's not, the other thing you learn as a parent is, as a caretaker, it's not an ego battle. It's not a win or lose. It's just show love and experience life with them. You know, laugh with them, cry absolutely. With them, comfort them when you can.
Exactly. So what do you hope the readers are going to take away from reading From Me to You?
Well, what I hope they will take away is how much they love their own families, be it their parents, their children, their uncles, their aunts. Hopefully we'll get people talking to each other. I love the fact that Bob called in, even though it was a difficult about that, if it gets that dialogue going, if it gets people communicating with each other, if it gets one person saying I love you to someone they love who wouldn't have otherwise said it, then my book is a success.
Yeah. Well, it already has. I mean, it saved one life of someone who commented to you on Facebook.
Indeed.
So there it is. Well, Norm, I really thank you for your time. I really enjoyed reading the stories, and this is one of those books that, you know, people can buy and share with their children, you know, their parents. It's one of those that it really, like you say, gets to the heart of some of life's issues and gets people talking. So I think it's a great, great book, and I'm going to recommend it as much as I can. So I really want to thank you for taking the time to speak with me.
Thank you for having me. What a treat and a fun experience.
It's been my
and I
pleasure.
Look forward to reading your book as well.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate that. Again, everyone, today my very special guest has been Norman Aljem. We've been talking about his new book, From Me to You, Stories About Life, Love, Family, Faith, and How to Negotiate a Bigger Allowance. Now, we didn't get to talk about how to negotiate that bigger allowance, so definitely get the book and get the answer to that. So, everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show, and until we meet again. Thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth Show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me, that's biteradio.me. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Bite Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.